Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Podcasting from the top of the rocks. This is News on the Rocks with Patty Steele.
So, John Elliott.
Yes, Patty Steele.
You and I are on a journey together. We got a chance last week ahead of time before it was released in theaters to see the film Unhinged with Russell Crowe. And then we got a chance to chat with Derek Bort, who is the wonderful director behind this film. And it was kind of interesting because we got to see it before anybody else saw it. And we also got to see it and talk about it before we saw what happened at the box office, because what makes this film especially of interest to anybody that's a film lover, everybody in Hollywood, both on the business end and the creative end, is that it is the first major release to hit theaters as they just begin to reopen in America.
But the harsh reality is the geography is working against them. New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, California. How many states don't even have theaters open at all?
Those states, those big cities, Maryland, Washington, D.C.,
right.
No theaters open.
And the ones that are open, you got to sit, you know, it's like 30% capacity.
And a room filled with people who are kind of scared to be there.
Right.
A lot of people don't go because they're frightened. And here we are in hindsight looking back and going, okay, what did it do at the box office? It did $4 million, which for a major movie star in a big film doesn't sound like a lot, but it's actually considered really good and really promising because of all of the negatives associated with hitting the movie theaters in these days of the pandemic.
$2,194 per theater, which again would be considered low, but when you are up against those kind of occupancy thresholds, that's great. And it's the first new wide release in American theaters, and it's number one, and it's so far number one for the summer, I think.
Yes.
Now, the competition is coming up, but this one really paved the way.
Yeah, definitely.
And that was why it was so interesting. On the day it's opening, we're talking to the director as he's sitting in a car in Virginia.
In Virginia.
And he's hanging out with his family.
And the guy running this for us was in Spain. And the promotion person
Elizabeth.
For a beautiful Elizabeth was in Scituate, Massachusetts.
Yeah, doing some ironing.
In her aunt's sewing room.
Amazing.
Too adorable. And here you and I were sitting in my kitchen, and now we're in a much better location. We're in my basement.
Yeah.
Or the lower level of my mansion.
So, Derek Bort, you have driven me to drink. This is actually today we're drinking Kettle One. It's a botanical peach and orange blossom, which is very gentle and sweet given what I just watched.
Nice. Okay.
Holy crap. I mean, Unhinged. I don't think it's been a long time since I've watched a movie where I was just, from like the moment it started, it's terrifying right from the get-go.
Well, thank you. I think that was the goal, and I'm glad that it seems like we've been successful in that. And, it's escapism, you know. I think that hopefully it takes people away from, you know, all the other things we're dealing with on a daily basis right now.
You said that you want this film to start conversations as to where we are right now. What kind of conversations do you think it will start?
Well, I think just based on what I've been hearing, I mean, you know, look, there's not any sort of big message in this film. I mean, it is pure entertainment. And yet at the same time, I do think that it has sparked some conversations about where we are in regards to civility and taking responsibility or even just apologizing for things. And it's like, so that's kind of a great bonus that people have said that, but really look, it's an adrenaline fueled ride is what it is.
You know, what's interesting about it, cause I was thinking as I was watching is we live in this incredible time right now where everybody's stressed out and freaked out and you just kind of want to lash out at people. And you know, and it's funny because you do realize how, and I don't want to give anything away, but you do realize how important it is to just kind of stop and take a moment to think before you react to things. Not because you're trying to protect yourself from getting, you know, ravaged, but because just what's the point? What's the point in just trying to make everything worse? It only makes you feel worse when you make someone else feel bad. I think that's at least the way I take it.
Sure. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that.
I have to ask you a question because I would hate to lose you, but, and I know this, no.
We only just met.
No, but God forbid something happens to the connection.
Oh.
So I'm just thinking, you know, I'd love to talk about Russell Crowe. I'd love to talk about that 15-year-old kid who was great. I'd love to talk how
wonderful
in the world you did all the car scenes. But now in New York, AMC is not opening.
Yeah.
In New Jersey, it's very hit and miss. We did a show on CBS News just today about the gradual reopening. Mm-hmm. Talk us through the decision of going ahead with the opening, and do you get an asterisk for box office? Because there's no way you have the capacity for box office.
Well, look, I think that there are people who have a lot more experience than I do as it relates to distribution, Mark Gill being, you know, the main one who decided this was the right thing to do. And you know, based on his rationale, you know, both Russell and I thought there was some merit to it. And you know, we're promoting and doing the things we have to do to help. My biggest thing was like, look, it's exciting to be the first film out of the gates. And yet you want to make sure it's being done safely. And I think that the places where they don't think that they can do it safely are not open. So, look, maybe it has an asterisk next to it. You know, that's a good point. But, I think that just based on the rollout in Australia and the parts of Europe that are open and how well it's done, you know, I think that, we'll get a lot of eyes on the film and it'll be done in a way that people won't be risking their health to do so.
It's kind of funny because I was thinking about this a lot. I mean, I got like a big giant drop down screen in one room here. I got like an 86 inch TV downstairs. I still would rather go to the movies.
Theater, yeah.
I want to go to the movies. I want to escape. I don't want to hear the phone ring. I don't want my kid to say, hey, where's the blah, blah, blah. I want to go in there. I want to lay back. I love these theaters where you can lie back, put your feet up. They bring you wine and you're watching on this enormous screen. Desperately want a return to that. And I kind of feel, you know, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but I feel like, why is that not? I just flew back from Colorado on the weekend. There was not an empty seat on the plane either way, going,
wow,
coming,
yeah,
home. Why can't I go to a movie theater where they can make sure that I'm only with the people I'm with? They can sanitize in between showings. They can separate us, you know, by those big, I don't understand that. What, why do they allow us to get on an airplane filled with people and recirculated air, but they won't allow us to go to a movie theater and just have a moment to escape?
Yeah. I mean, obviously a good question. Everything that I've seen as far as what they're doing with the theaters that are open with reduced capacities at 30% to, sanitization between screenings and masks and touch-free entry and you name it, it seems to me like it's far safer than some of the you know, airlines that are running and some of the schools that are opening, that's for sure.
So, you know, your movie, and this one isn't the only one, they're terrifying, but you I find fascinating. Because if I'm reading this, you're a writer, producer, director.
Yeah.
So before I go way back to your history as a TV reporter, which I find intriguing, as a Hollywood, you know, aficionado, what's more important, the writing or the directing?
Wow. I mean, you know, I think that you, it's easy to take a great script and make a horrible movie out of it, but I don't think you can make a great movie out of a bad script. So I think it all does start with the script. Not to take away from you know, the effect that my job has on a film, or that anybody, you know, being, everything's important, and, you know, down to the people who do the final finishing work. So, you know, it does start with a good script. I think that's a necessity, but at the same time, you know, like it's all important.
Yeah. And, but I understand that it was the script that Russell really liked the script,
the story. Yeah.
And that's what hooked him in. What was he like?
Russell was read the script, and I think it scared the hell out of him. At least that's what he said. And we met, and he was kind of, you know, I think at that point, 50-50. And then he asked me to, he watched my film American Dreamer from last year with Jim Gaffigan. And the next day said, we need to talk more. And he loved the film and was very intrigued. And, you know, we just kept talking. And I think that, you know, it was just kind of the momentum started building, and next thing you know, he's in, you know? So I think it was a combination of everything with Russell. At least that's what he says.
What was it like to direct The Gladiator?
Well, I mean, look, he brings a lot to the table, you know. I mean, he's experienced. He's obviously amazingly talented, and you know, it was a very collaborative effort, in that, you know, he's the kind of person that comes to work every day with ideas. He you know, we're constantly talking about, you know, next day's work, the next week's work. And I think, you know, the only normalcy I had while shooting this film in New Orleans during hurricane season was, you know, dinners at Russell's house, just kind of spending time going through, you know, just kind of delving into the material, so that, you know, we show up the next day with really, really on the same page. And so, look, it was a pleasure to direct him. He really, you know, he gets everyone on set, including me, to raise their game, you know. I mean, he really does kind of demand excellence of himself and everyone else around him.
I wonder how he, at the end of the day, I mean, I couldn't stop thinking about this as I watched him, the rage and the insanity and the unhinged nature of his, that personality. How do you just go, okay, that's a wrap, see you tomorrow? I don't know how you get past that, because it's like, honestly, I would not want him to come home to me after filming that movie every day. I would need him to go take a break somewhere.
Well, that's what the vodka's for.
Yeah, that's what this was for.
You know, I think he really is such a pro that, you know, we'd be in the middle of, let's say, one of the heaviest scenes in the film, and I'm standing off to the side of my monitor, and he just finishes, you know, committing some awful act.
Horrible.
And he walks around the corner, and the moment he knows he's off camera, he's cracking a joke to me. And, you know, it's sort of, he really can turn it on and off. You know, he has such a command, I think, over, you know, kind of what he does, that I never saw it carry over once the cameras weren't rolling.
Now, let me ask you this, as a director, that Gabriel Bateman, I think his name is, I know he's been in a lot of movies, but this was a very intense movie. And I mean, those were actual car chase scenes. There was a lot of, how do you direct a minor?
Man, he is adorable.
Really intense situations.
You know, Gabe is incredible. I mean, really very experienced and really just a total pro. And, you know, he made my job easier as well. I mean, you know, he showed up with ideas, and we found, sometimes he had questions that I didn't know the answer to. So we found them together, and really he just, you know, it's great when you know, 90% of making a film is casting, you know, when you've got great people that you're working with, it makes it a lot easier on the day once the camera's rolling. That's for sure.
I have to say, as a mother of two sons, a little bit older than that, but not too much, I kept watching that thinking, oh my God, how is she going to help him get past this at some point in his life? Is this, this is not based on any kind of a true story, I'm hoping.
Oh, I hope not. I hope not. You'd have to ask Carl, the writer, about that.
Okay. I didn't know whether maybe he shared that with you or not, but I was...
Oh, no, I didn't, there's some things you don't want to know.
It's weird because, I mean, I think if we're all being honest, other than John, who's the most mild-mannered individual, I think we've all been through those moments. I mean, you drive around the New York area, and sometimes you're sitting in traffic. And
these morons on the West Side Highway today.
I was
unbelievable.
I was driving.
I'm trying to get to the bridge, and it's like, what, all of a sudden, where's
the
parade?
Right? I was driving past Giant Stadium. This was a few years back. I'd had a long work day, kids at home, trying to get stuff done, and this moron goes driving up on the what do you call it?
The median.
On the shoulder. On the shoulder. And I like nose my car over so he can't get by because he's not supposed to do that. He starts honking at me. Then he goes around me and he gives me the finger. I give it back and I put the window down and I said, you don't even want to get involved with me. And he drove away. And I went, thank God, because I wouldn't even squash a bug.
Derek, you know that Patty Steele is a beloved radio personality in New York. Everybody loves.
But we all can get there. And the scary thing is all you have to do is run into one person who says, what are you going to do to me? And then you're unhinged. I know you don't want to look at the movie as a lesson, but to me, that was the takeaway that, oh man, keep your mouth shut. I haven't done that in years. That was many years ago.
And if somebody has your wife's phone, let him keep the phone. So, hey, I've got to ask you this question too, because I am fascinated, because you are an inspiration to men my age everywhere. How did you segue out of TV into art into, I mean, you were always in kind of the movie business, but what was the deal at Wavy TV? What was that all about?
I was a feature reporter many, many years ago there, and just kind of finding my way, and you know, knew I wanted to move towards films and just kind of, at 20 some years old, that was an opportunity that came up, and every day that I had to go out and create a story from scratch and, you know, basically write it, edit it, you name it. It was almost like having to do a short film every single day for work. And, it was great training. I think along with, you know, I directed a hundreds of commercials after that and just kind of, just kept moving towards what it was I wanted to do.
And what is that? What do you want to do? I mean, have you found your happy place? Is it writing and directing?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. I mean, I think that just finding great projects and, you know, people that I want to work with and, you know, you spend a year of your life on one of these things under serious duress. So you better be working with people that you can get along with when the meter's running or you know, when the bullets are flying.
Yeah. I think everybody wonders when they look at somebody like you, what was the moment when you got done like directing a commercial and someone actually said, yeah, you want to direct a movie? How do you make that crossover?
Well, I mean, I think I just kind of realized that the only way it was going to happen was if I had a script that people wanted that I could hold out to direct it because, I wasn't going to get hired to jump from commercials to features. So I wrote the Joneses and, turned down several offers to sell it because I really only wrote it so that I could direct it. And, you know, 7 years later, we ended up making the film and here we are today.
Wow.
What do you think of like this new golden age of subscription viewing, I don't even want to call it television anymore.
The streaming.
Could you be seduced into a big Netflix project, or do you have anything like that in the work right now that we don't know about?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've got a few irons in the fire, that some of which may end up, you know, streaming. But I think, you know, I think that what it causes, I think, is a lot more demand for content, which is good.
Yes.
Because you've got all these outlets that need content to stream. And, you know, I think certain projects are better suited for those platforms, you know. So I think Unhinged was always meant to be a theatrical release, and that's what Solstice's mandate is. And you know, I think that's really where it does play best. But there are other projects where you just kind of know that, you know, a Netflix or something like that is the best place for it to be. So I absolutely have, you know, some of those in my sights, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
Do you think that movies are ever going to, or movie theaters, you think it's ever going to go back to the way it was? Or do you think that, because I mean, look, theaters were struggling anyway before the pandemic, and this really, you know, put a silver bullet in them. And you know, I would love to believe that there is a path forward. Maybe it's a different path forward. Do you ever think about that? Do you have any thoughts about what the path forward would look like if it's going to change?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that people want to be together in that kind of immersive communal experience that is only available via, you know, movie theaters. And you know, it seems like lately the most of the films that end up there are, you know, obviously like the tent poles. And it seems like a lot of films that are a lot of material that used to end up in indie theaters that I used to gravitate towards are more likely to end up in series these days, where, you know, they can take chances a little more or right, you know, have a small, you know, small but dedicated audience to something. But you know, I'm sure it'll find a way. I mean, I think that people are going to want to go into a dark room and lose themselves for 90 minutes together in some way. And you know, while it might, you know, take a while to figure out what the new normal is, I'm sure it will continue to exist in some way.
I have to say, I in the last couple of years have become inordinately fond of these theaters. And I kind of feel like, you know, it's one thing to walk into a theater and be side by side jammed in like you're in, you know, economy class on an airline to watch a movie and your feet are sticking to the floor. And then instead you pay a little bit more, but you go in, you put your feet up, and it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like going to live theater. You're willing to pay for this really kind of extraordinary experience. And for me, these new theaters that they've been opening a lot of, which offer a really kind of terrific luxe experience and a great night out where you can get decent food and you can get a drink and you can sit back and watch this fabulous film on a big screen. To me, that has become like a really great way to go to the movies.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I definitely try to find those places, you know, wherever I am when I'm you know, traveling and want to go to the movies. I always look to those kind of theaters first. And I totally agree with you on that.
You know, speaking of traveling, I'm fascinated by what you are doing now, making history as the first major release after an unprecedented pandemic. Normally, we would have red carpets here, red carpets there, red carpets everywhere. Mm. We would have had you on our show in New York. You would have done the KCBSs and the WBBMs. How do you go about the business
promoting it,
of promoting, other than doing this podcast? But how do you go about doing what you normally would do to get the word out about a major film?
I mean, I think that, you know, look, I had to finish the film virtually. I mean, I came back to Virginia when L.A. got shut down and was working with my composer in Spain and my sound department and editorial in L.A. and visual effect in Vancouver and even actors in Australia, and just kind of had a real-time kind of command center worked out at home in my screening room and finished the film.
Were you done with just principal photography before the pandemic hit?
No. I mean, I had a cut of the film done for the most part, but LA shut down and we had a delivery date that, you know, we still had to meet. So, you know, there was still work left to do. And thankfully, you know, we figured out ways to accomplish it. I mean, I'd always rather be in the room with people, but at the same time, as long as you know that you're looking at the same image and you're hearing the same thing, it's, you know, we figured out that it's doable virtually. And I think the same applies to the, you know, promotion of a film as well. I mean, Russell's done all the major talk shows virtually from his farm out in the bush in Australia. And, you know, not as exciting as having him there in person, but at the same time, hopefully as effective as it can be.
Yeah. Wow. Man, it's such a weird time. And I guess this movie, it was interesting to me because I thought, in a sense, it is a total escape. On the other hand, my heart was racing, and it hasn't, with everything going on, it hasn't raced that much in a long time. So, you know, I kudos to you if you're trying to frighten me, because boy, you did a hell of a job.
Well, thanks. No, look, escapism, I guess, can be a lot of different things. I mean, you know, not necessarily relaxing, but just taking your mind off day to day. And I think that it seems like this film has done a pretty good job of that.
What's a Hollywood director like you do now? So we're both members of the Screen Actors Guild, so we get all the emails about this graduated return to work. Mm-hmm. What is the discipline of your life if this project's done and you still have some handicaps? What's like next Tuesday look like for you?
Next Tuesday, I'm going to, I'm in Virginia right now. So I'm, you know, spend a lot more family time than I normally do. So, probably, you know, go surfing with my 10-year-old son or something and, do a little writing and just kind of, you know, try to just keep it going.
Is he going to see the movie?
No.
No, he's not going to see the movie, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think it would be pretty terrifying.
What is the oldest member of your family that you will lie? Do you have a beloved grandmother? Will you let her see this movie?
You know, I think my mother says she's going to go see it tonight, and I'm you know, kind of skeptical, but, you know, we'll see. And, you know, my teenage daughters are both going to go see it. You know, everyone in between. So I think that they're all excited to go see what the social distancing and limited capacity theater is going to be like tonight.
Yeah.
Russell was on, I'm trying to remember what show, he's on one of the late night shows last night. And I ran back sound on the air this morning talking about the movie. And what he said last night was, I've already instructed my mother not to see this film. I thought that was very funny.
Yeah, no, I tried that, but I don't think it's going to be very effective with my own mother.
Right. You're her baby.
Yeah. I think she'll probably stand up in the theater and tell everyone
that's my son. One thing I my takeaway from this is that I really need a pair of candy cane scissors.
They can be very, very important, very, very valuable. Yes.
Yeah. And they're cute. Well, I want to thank you so much. This has been really fascinating, and what a journey I guess we're all on, but you in particular in your industry, you're going to see things change. And I guess the important thing is to be flexible and to look for the path forward, not regret what isn't, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that you know, things will find a way and to become whatever they're going to become, I'm confident that somehow, you know, we'll get through all this stuff.
Yeah, we all love a good story, and we all want to be entertained. So it'll happen. We just have to be open to new ways of doing it, right?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
Good luck with the box office, too. I think it's great that you're making history and you're finally standing up to it and getting theaters open. I mean, it's very important that we have new releases to get in these theaters.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I hope that, you know, hope people come out and check the film out.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And enjoy beautiful Virginia. Love Virginia.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you wanting to talk to me today.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, great. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.